This is an ABC podcast.
Welcome to the season of Tall Tales and True, the podcast that brings together the best in live storytelling from across Australia. This is a show where storytellers get up in front of a live audience and share a true story. Stories that make you go quiet, put a lump in your throat, make you squeal with laughter, and stories that just stay with you. I'm your host, Kel Wilson, and I love a good story, whether I'm telling it, whether I'm in it, or whether I'm just the one going, "Oh no, you didn't, not both wombats." This season, we have five stories about the changes that come from letting go. Easy to say, but not so easy to do. When someone says, "Just let it go," they're either misquoting that song from Frozen, or they mean, "Move on, get over it." But that's not always the easiest thing to do, especially when it's something you've learnt from a young age. This podcast will bring us five stories of those moments when, confronted with the reality of being stuck on repeat or of simpler stumbling blocks, we choose to act, we choose to make a change. Our first storyteller is a woman who, as a child, felt responsible for making others feel sad. Jessica Ferrari lost her dad to cancer when she was very young, and by 10, sick of the awkward silences that her loss evoked in others, she told everyone she was over it. It was only years later that she learned it was okay to be sad. Here she is at the Melbourne Story Slam for The Moth.
So, I've experienced death twice. Not mine, I'm not Jesus. What I mean is I've been close to someone who's died. Not close as in proximity. I haven't been sitting next to someone and they've gone, "Eh." Not that that's how people die, obviously, but it's how my little sister used to pretend to when we were kids. She'd let out this tortured squawk and then she'd cross both her arms over her chest and try desperately to lie still, wondering why my big sister and I weren't crying or calling an ambulance. But we were laughing. And probably the reason we were laughing and making light of death was because it was our way of coping. Because you see, my first experience of death was when my dad died of cancer when I was 5. And now you don't need to tell me how sad and heavy that is. I know. I've been avoiding talking about it my whole life to protect against the pain. Not my own pain, other people's. You see, what happens when people learn this about me, that my dad died of cancer when I was 5, is this horrible dynamic plays out. Initially, there's this second of shocked silence, and this just serves to punctuate the sound of the thud, oof, as their heart drops down to kick them in the guts. And then there's always a heartfelt sorry, which is really lovely. And then there's a long, awkward silence as they desperately try to find the right words, or maybe they feel guilty for bringing it up and reminding me. And I'm a peacekeeping, people-pleasing middle child, and awkward silences are my kryptonite. And so I make it stop by being okay, by telling them that I came out the other side of it and that I'm fine. But it's always kind of bothered me that the onus is on the person grieving to make other people feel better about their grief. And this is so ingrained in me that by the time I was 10, I was telling people that I was over it, that it had happened half my lifetime ago, and that I was completely over it. At age 10, I didn't even know what my dad's death meant. I remember my dad's funeral. It was a great day. I was outside in the sunshine, and I spent the day decorating my father's grave with flowers I'd picked off other people's graves. And I think that's a really funny and beautiful story, but I learned to stop telling it because it made other people feel uncomfortable and sad. And it's sort of like if you imagine life as a house party. Pretty much the minute I arrive, I'm handed this flimsy plastic cup and it is filled to the brim with grief and sadness. And before I've even had a chance to look into it, it fuses to me and becomes part of me. And I can't put it down or let it go. And when anyone else at this house party of life notices I'm holding the cup, some of the grief and sadness spills out and makes everyone else around me sad. And it's not a bad sad. They're sad for me. But it's still sad, and I don't want to be responsible for anybody else's sadness. You don't want to be a downer. Nobody wants to be the Eeyore at the life party, house party of life. And so I learned to avoid it and to disguise it and to pretend that I'm fine. But I couldn't avoid it when a dear friend of mine in his early 40s was diagnosed with an aggressive brain tumour. And I felt useless. And so I called my mum up and I said, "Mum, what can I do to help? Can I send a fruit basket? Can I hold a charity marathon bake-off in my undies?" I said, what helped you when Dad was dying of cancer? And she said, "Well, you can actually just continue to be a part of the rest of his life." She said, "The death part actually happens really quickly, but the dying can take a long time and it's really lonely." And so that's what I did. I wasn't at his bedside every day. His amazing wife, Fee, did that. But every month or so, I would reach out. And if they were up to it, I would hang out. And it was not easy. It would take me a couple of days to work myself up, and it would take me weeks to recover because, you see, Morgan was a stuntman for a living. He defied death for a living, and so it seemed so cruel that he wasn't only being cheated of his life, but he was also being cheated of his death in the form of cancer. And as it progressed, it was really hard because every time I went to see him, he was less and less him. The last time I saw him, I sat down next to him and he went, "Eh!" No, he didn't do that. He would have if he could have, but he couldn't move, he couldn't talk. Fee was feeding him solidified water because he couldn't swallow, but she said he was really good at meaningful looks. And so I held his hand and I looked into his eyes and I could see that he was still there. And even though he couldn't talk, I mean, even though I could still talk, it didn't seem right that he couldn't. So I tried my hand at a meaningful look dialogue and I told him that I loved him, that I was honoured to know him and that I'd look after Fee. And he looked at me and he must have known that I wasn't ready to let go, maybe because I was holding his hand so tightly. And he looked at me and he winked. And I knew that that was his way of telling me it was okay. And I felt so guilty because he was a man who was dying and he was trying to make me feel better about it. But then the more I looked into his eyes, the more that I saw that he actually was okay. And if he could be okay, maybe I could be too. And maybe part of being okay is not being okay and not disguising it. Thank you.
Massive thanks to Jessica for her story. If that story brought up any issues for you, or if someone you know needs help or advice, there is support available. You can talk to someone at Lifeline right now on 13 11 14 or at the Suicide Callback Service on 1300 659 467. Jessica was live on stage at the Melbourne Story Slam for the Moth, a regular live storytelling event and podcast, which is true stories told live without notes that I get to host. I'm very lucky. Next up on Tall Tales and True, how to not be inconspicuous.
The bloody thing's caught the wind and off it goes. She's still tucking herself in and now I'm holding onto the rudder, being dragged along behind the catamaran like that, going, "Pull it round, pull it round!"
Tall Tales and True is the best of live storytelling across Australia. If you're liking what you're hearing, please subscribe so you never miss an episode. I'm Cal Wilson and this is Tall Tales and True. Thanks so much for listening.